Welcome to a brand spanking new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. As a counting down to our 400th episode and our 10th anniversary episode, which is on the horizon, even though we have not even, we don't even know what we're doing for that, but it is going to be a whole separate episode. It's going to be, it's not going to count in the numbering system. It's just going to be the grand 10th anniversary episode. But so exciting things coming up, and you can keep up with all those exciting things at www.therebelradiopodcast.com.
The WrestleMania podcast, yeah. Brother.
Hey man, I'm not gonna lie, me and Frank have toyed around with the idea of starting a wrestling podcast. And we're 70% serious. But it's just, I don't know. We thought about it because
that would be pretty cool.
Because if there's one niche that Frank has, that would be something that he would be very good at.
Talking wrestling.
Frank might not know how to tie his shoes, but he knows wrestling.
Dudes in spandex rubbing on each other. That's Frank's chan, baby.
That's Frank 100%. Yeah. So, you know, but that's just that's a major teaser at something that might not ever happen. But we really have kind of discussed a little bit. But yeah, man, so the rebelradiopodcast.com, that's for this show, not a show that doesn't exist. And so a lot of exciting things happening. And 10 years, man, we're getting there. And we're going to be at Comicpalooza for like, hell, maybe our 8th, 9th, maybe our 10th. Not quite 10 years because we didn't do it. It's probably about our 8th or 9th year at Comicpalooza.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep track because you had the COVID year and you had different years, you know, and things like that. But it's cool, man. We'll be back there in a few weeks. And I guess we can announce that we're going to be talking 25 years of The Phantom Menace. And will be our thing. We're going to have some trivia for people and we're going to have some fun. And we're going to discuss The Phantom Menace that started the prequels and the renaissance of Star Wars, I think it's fair to say. And so that'll be our topic, Comicpalooza, this year. And it'll be fun, man. You know, then we saw this week they announced Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd and James Tolkien, who played the principal,
and he was the guy from
Master of the Universe of the Universe.
Yeah,
and so pretty cool lineup. That I'm pretty impressed with that. I mean, Christopher Lloyd, I think is cool. I still think prices are fucking ridiculous. I'm not paying $129 for a picture with Christopher Lloyd. It's like, come on, man.
And then
$229 for Michael J. Fox.
And you can only split it two ways. It goes up if you want to split it four ways.
That's fucking ridiculous. I mean,
yeah, it's $279.
See, I mean, he's going to be sitting in a chair of spazzing next to you. I'm sorry. That's wrong. I shouldn't say that. Matt's like, motherfucker, you actually said that. Dude. You know, what's funny is, though, you look at Shannon Doherty's autograph. Because she's fighting cancer, which, you know, it's fair. So she's not signing at the table. You have to pre-order an autograph, you know, which is cool. You know, it's fine. Totally respectful. But Michael J. Fox, actually, I guess, is signing at the table. So that's good. He's still able to sign. And I bet he's going to have very limited. I bet his autograph hours are very limited because I can't imagine he could sit there for hours and do that.
Yeah.
But no, mad respect to Michael J. Fox. I'm teasing about the joke, man. And, you know, nobody, you know, yell at me on social media, you know, because
I've thought about it, but it's like, man, that's you know, too way money. Too high of a price tag. And then I already told Jackie we could get the Charmed, you know, picture because she, you know, it's always, I usually make it mostly about me, Comicpalooza when we're there, and you know, this time something that she really. Really, I mean, really likes.
I just can't get into the celebrity thing enough to do that. Like, there's like last year, I was all over Carl Urban. I was down. Let's do it, Matt. And he canceled. And you know, Kristen Ritter was cool. You know, but there's, and those were reasonable. They were like, what, we paid $90. We split it $45 each. Wasn't that bad?
Yeah.
Wasn't you bad. Start getting up there over 150, and that's just too much, man. Not just for a fucking photograph. It's like, no, you're gonna, you know. Give me a rub down or something, you know, put one in the stink for me or something. You know, I'm just saying, right? That kind of money, man. You know, it's like
part my way, you know, make it memorable, you know.
Right, exactly, man.
Kristen Ritter ripped ass right there. Yeah.
You know, can at least get can I get Christopher Lloyd to call me John Big Booty or something from Buckaroo Banzai? You know, something.
Yeah.
I mean, but you know, it's cool, man. I mean, you know, I still feel that Comicpalooza unfortunately feels like has-beens. Not has-beens. That doesn't sound right. Yesterday's news. Does that make sense?
Okay.
I'm still hoping they pull out a big current guest. I guess John Cena is a big current guest. I'll give him credit on that one. John Cena is absolutely current.
Yeah.
But he's the only one that's super current. Let's get some more current people, you know? So hopefully they do that before all is said and done. And I'm also not the world's biggest Back to the Future fan. I still think it's, I like it, but I still think it's one of the largely overrated 80s flicks. I think it's okay. It's entertaining. I've never been, I own it. Don't get me wrong. I appreciate it, but I've never been like live and die by Back to the Future. It's okay. You know, it's nothing. It's cool. I guess there's about 25 other 80s films I could probably watch before it, maybe more than that. You know, that's just my feelings on it. You know, I think it's really fucking creepy how he tries to make out with his mom, and people have ignored that after all these years. It's weird. I knew that was weird when I was young. I'm like, why is he trying to kiss his mom? I've always thought that was weird, you know, or his mom's trying to kiss him, I guess you should say. And he's in his underwear, which makes it even weirder.
Yeah,
I know she doesn't know, but it's still weird. It's like you could have done
started the grandfather paradox. The grandfather paradox.
You know, it's weird.
You know, maybe it was still, you know, it was Zemeckis. Zemeckis, maybe.
But Christopher Lloyd, man, I want to ask Christopher Lloyd if he'd made the Piranha. Like, if I had to ask him any questions, it'd be this random question like, hey, man, did you make Piranha just to see all the tits of the movie? I mean, I wonder how he'd probably go. Knowing Lloyd, he'd probably play it off cool. You know, he seems like a cool motherfucker, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
You know, so, you know, but, but, you know, I mean, I'm just. Inquiring minds like, no, I mean, Riley Steele was in that fucking movie and she's butt ass naked. I mean, not that you can't pull up the internet sign, but there she was, you know.
Yeah, she was there.
And Christopher Lloyd got to be a part of it with a weird dance.
Is that the one with Hasselhoff in there too?
Was he in that one? He might have been. I know he was in the second one because he holds his head gets chopped off and his head flies in the girl's tits, remember?
Yeah.
That second one's horrible.
That was 3D.
I mean, they're both pretty horrible. But the second one was real. The second one didn't even make sense. There's like 20 minutes of the movie of just shots of the water and like trying to be creepy and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, just to expand the film. That's ridiculous. But anyway, that said, Compalooza, May 24th through 26th at George R. Brown Convention Center here in Houston, Texas. We will be there. Rebel Radio Podcast Live. We haven't done a live show since last Compalooza, so
it should be cool.
We had fun last year, and I'm sure we'll end up on a panel or something too. We always do, most likely. And this year, man, because you're going to be there both days, you're not chipping out on the panel on me. Last year, I mean, not that me and George Trispas and Carrie didn't pull off the panel with our expertise. We all had a great time on our panel, but Matt skipped out on me on that. You ain't skipping out this year, bitch, if we're on a panel. So, you know, I'm going to hold you to it. But anyway, so that said, man, did you check out that Transformers 1 trailer today?
I did.
Yeah, I think
and I was surprised.
It looks fun.
Yeah.
I kind of was slightly hoping for a darker tone for the animated film, in line with the 86 film. But I still dig it. I think the idea of a prequel in the beginnings of Cybertron are cool. It looked like a lot of fun. It would have been great to have Frank Welker and Peter Cullen come back as the voices, but okay, you know, it's fine. Chris Hemsworth and whatever the other dude's name is. Skojo's in there with a voice. You know, I'm sure she's playing RC, you know. So it, but it looks cool, man. You know, Paramount has you know, their Ninja Turtles movie was cool last year. So their animation studio seems to be doing some cool stuff. Hopefully,
the animation looks good.
Yeah, animation looks sharp, looks good. Looks like it'll have a lot of action in it.
As long as it's not like you know, so goofy it's Revenge of the Fallen, you know. It's like I'm good with that. And it looks like it's the good kind of funny and the good kind of silly.
Even the trailer, the jokes played well, didn't seem kind of too dumb. So, you know, it's always kind of look for that. You know, you and Long know how I am about comedy. So when I see a trailer and the comedy jokes are starting to fall flat already, I'm just like, I shake my head. But the comedy fell fine in the trailer. So, you know. Excuse me.
I'm very surprised. But like you said, I thought it was going to be a little darker. In the trailer, it's like, before he was Megatron. Before he was a spark in his mother's eye.
I'm a little surprised it's got a September 20th release date, which is usually not the best time for films because of back to school and post movies. You know, you feel like maybe it would have had an August release like Ninja Turtles did, which ended up doing well at that time. You know, you could have brought it out in August, gives families alternative viewing against Alien Romulus because that's more for adults. But, you know, hopefully it plays well. Maybe it gets moved again, you know, a little bit just to, for a better release. But you know, movies now, it's a, you know, it's not as much of a death sentence for certain times of year as it used to be. Like, you remember back in the day, you could never release a movie in January or February. Now you get some huge hits out in January or February. So, you know.
There are movies that do pretty damn good in January and February.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. So it should be fine. They finally got around to announcing that there will be a Monarch season two, which is cool. But Legendary and Apple TV want more spinoffs. That's the part that scares me. Let's not water it down. Let's get this one right first. Let's get the budget up. Let's have more monsters in it than the first season.
Substance.
Had.
Yeah.
Yes. Because you start doing a spinoff of Mothra and a spinoff of Rodan and all these other characters, you know, let's not do too much. That part's a little, you know, and it may never happen. It might be just producers at Legendary talking like, hey, we want to do this. But, you know, if it never happens, that's okay too. Let's just get Monarch season two, and filming's expected to start as early as the summer. So for hopefully a release in early 2026. So, you know, I'm fine with that. Keep the Godzilla train rolling. There was some news this week that Godzilla Minus One is getting a streaming release on Amazon Prime on May 3rd, but only in Japan.
The fine print.
I'm a little frustrated with this. I understand that Japanese releases always take some time to get the news out there and to get people to and to get releases here. Mm-hmm. Shin Godzilla took almost 7 months before it had an American release, but this was a massive hit. I mean, it's an Oscar winner. It feels like Toho would be moving a little bit quicker on this. That's just how I feel. Like, I don't care if it doesn't come out till September, but give us a release date at least so we know, so we have some hope. You know, movie's been out of theater since end of February. It's won an Oscar. It's time. Like, come on, Toho, give us some news.
Yeah.
Because, man, this was a remarkable film. It was our movie of the year. I can't wait to own it. Can't wait to watch it again.
Yeah, if the Boy and the Heron is about to hit streaming, then why can't we get, you know, Godzilla Minus One?
Yeah, but there's no official release date of that yet either, to be fair.
Yeah, but I see it on my Vudu where it says soon.
You can pre-order it, but yet there's no official release date of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like just, but let's get it done, man. Come on, Toho. You know, give us this film because we deserve it. The world deserves it. People, I know a lot of people that were on the fence and didn't go see it because they didn't want to, you know, people don't always want to watch a foreign language film in theaters. They want to watch it at home. So a lot of people that still want to see this movie that haven't gotten to see it. Yeah. So I think it's time to give us Godzilla Minus One, or at least a release date to look forward to, you know, and we'll see what happens. And then lastly, Max went ahead, or Netflix, announced that The Witcher will end after the fifth season. Fourth season just is fixing and being in production. So they're going to go ahead and knock that out after five seasons. So Witcher fans, I know, have been waiting a long time for the fourth season to come, and it's just now starting production.
Yeah.
And it's funny though, you know, it's great that we have streaming television and we can watch stuff, but at the same time, it's like, man, you know, in the '80s and nineties, you know, and TV season started in September, started in January. Now it's like, some of these 2 or 3 year gaps between these TV shows, it's like, it's frustrating to keep up with. Like it feels, here we go again, waiting on the final season of Stranger Things, you know? And it's just like, so you commit to these things, but you have to wait a long fucking time for them to come out sometimes. I guess it's just the way the business has changed. And, but you know, people want their shit, man, you know, bring it to them now.
Like a JG Wentworth commercial, you know,
but then
I eat it now.
On the flip side of that, you can watch a lot of movies now within 45 days. You can either buy them digitally or you can watch them streaming. Which is what I did this week. I watched One Love, the Bob Marley film.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it, man. It's not your standard biopic from when he was born to when, you know, it kind of starts where his career is kind of when he is starting to take off. He's getting the movement in Jamaica and, you know, assassination attempt on his life, you know, because the political parties are fighting. There's war going on in Jamaica and he's trying to, you know, unite the people through his music. And so he ends up, you know, leaving Jamaica and he goes to London to record the famous Exodus album, you know, which is considered one of the, you know, greatest rock and roll albums of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. So it focuses on the Exodus album and his career taking off. And he does have flashbacks from his childhood and is in dealing with his having a white father that didn't really care for him, you know, in his way. And, but man, the actor who plays him, Adzir, I think I can't remember his whole name, man. He's really good. I really liked him as Jimi Hendrix. You know, the film doesn't, you know, Bob Marley. Yeah. Marley, you know, had 11 children. Only four of them were legitimately his, and he had a lot of children. And there's some talk about, like, did he sleep around on Rita? A lot of people believe the Rastafari movement allowed him, like, women that needed children to provide them children. You know, mm-hmm. I was reading some stuff about how that works. So the movie doesn't play on that too much. They leave that stuff out because it's probably wasn't important, but it did show him, you know, being a good dad and things like that. It's just, you know, 36 years old man died of a rare cancer. And, his career was just taking off. You know, he had toured America, you know, he's starting to take off here and the reggae movement hadn't caught on yet, you know, and obviously now, you know, 40 years later, he's considered one of our greatest artists of all time, you know, and, mm-hmm. And his music resonates with everyone. Everyone hears a Bob Marley song, they instantly recognize it.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, just say it's a good film, man. It's definitely worth the watch. You know, I'm not going to say it's like the best biopic ever, but I mean, if you've ever listened to Bob Marley, you appreciate great music. It's worth the watch.
What's it on?
It's on Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus. Okay.
So, yeah. So it's worth the watch. And, I also watched this week. I mean, I've been watching a lot of wrestling again this year, and I watched on Peacock the Bray Wyatt documentary called Becoming Immortal. And for people that don't know, you know, Bray Wyatt passed away tragically last August, and he's also only 36 years old. And you know, he lit up the world in the WWE, you know, with his character and storytelling of a new kind like no one had ever seen before. And playing dark, scary characters, but also this guy was an amazing light in the world, man. Everyone knew him, loved him. He left four amazing children on this planet. And it's a really good documentary. WWE and Peacock do an excellent job, but man, have some tissues near, because it's tough, man. It is tough. You feel the love this guy had for the world and the way people loved him. You know, and it just shows you, man, you don't judge a book by the cover. Here's a guy with big dude, tattoos, dreads, playing this dark character named Bray Wyatt and the Fiend in the WWE. Mm-hmm. But this guy was full of life, man. No one had anything bad to say about him. Loved by his family. His dad, Mike Rotunda, was also a famous wrestler in the 80s in the WWE. He came from a wrestling family. And his brother is also a wrestler. And now in current, the WWE is teasing his brother and the Wyatt family coming back to pay tribute to his legacy. You know, they've been teasing that the last few weeks and stuff. And so, you know, just if you're into wrestling or into just a great story about a great person and a great documentary, watch the Bray Wyatt Becoming Immortal documentary on Peacock. Definitely worth your watch, man. Cause it's not just about wrestling. It's just about a good man, you know, and, is definitely worth watching. And then I did watch the new episode of X-Men 97. It was okay. Felt a bit stepped back after last week's Dramatics episodes, but they revealed that Professor X is still alive, which we kind of mm-hmm. already knew. If you remember the end of the original series, the Shi'ar took his body to their space. And of course, now it's revealed that he was brought back to life. That was really the big take from the episode, you know, then a lot of political
models and he can walk.
Other stuff, and he can walk. Yeah. I'm sure it's leading up to something soon. You know, the Shi'ar Empire will probably end up clashing with the X-Men and things like that. But it was cool. You know, it felt like a big setup episode for things to come, you know, yeah. Which we might not even get to till the second season. Yeah. You know, but, that's how I felt about that episode.
Yeah. And got a good look at Gladiator.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah.
I've seen Gladiator.
It was cool. Have you noticed the intro changes slightly every week?
Yeah, depending on what character is going to be shown.
Yes, they put little scenes in it. Then they had Nightcrawler to the intro.
Mm-hmm.
And they took Gambit Cable out.
In one.
And they took Gambit out. But it was strangely, was Magneto in the intro? He was, wasn't he? But not Gambit. Weird, right?
Yeah, that is weird.
Makes you wonder.
Is Magneto dead?
Yeah.
Well, remember they, he was trying to shield those other mutants.
Right.
And then his magnetic shield wore out and you see this big explosion and the sentry or the sentinel goes, Omega threat eliminated.
Right.
And so see, it's like, I will eliminate it. Incapacitated or deceased?
The producer said that we're not going to know for a while. They're going to leave us in the dark. But Magneto still being in the trailer, in the credits, makes you wonder.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. But only like three episodes left. Or four. It's only 10 episodes, I think. So it's four left. 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah. So
Storm getting her powers back was pretty good.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I kind of knew that was going to happen. But it was still
cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you knew it was going to happen whenever they were still following that story, and you're like,
right,
if she wasn't going to get her powers back, she would just disappear, you know?
Right. But that's the stuff I watched this week. I checked out.
Yeah. I had started Fallout last week, and this week I finished it, and I've never played any of the games.
I've tried to start it like three times, and I just... something comes up. I just haven't had a chance to start it yet.
Yeah. I like it, man. It got me into Fallout. I actually downloaded Fallout 76, played it for a little bit. I'm trying to, you know, get the gameplay going, crafting stuff. I'm trying to get better at that.
That's the online one, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Fallout the online 76. One. Yeah. But it's fun so far. It kind of reminds me a little bit of KOTOR, but with crafting, you know, like, and I got the one where I can start out level 20 with leather armor out of the gate. And so I chose that one so I didn't have to start from a complete deficit. But yeah, man, going around killing robots, mutants. Haven't run into anyone from the Brotherhood of Steel yet, or any, you know, any ghouls, I don't think, but yeah, it's fun. Another thing I did was, downloaded Diablo 4. I think I mentioned that last week, but I played some more of it. And, then I had pre-ordered Dune 2 and we went ahead and watched that last night. So I watched Dune 2 again. And it's still great. Still same thing. The pace is just moves along. Doesn't even really feel like you're watching a almost 4 hour movie. But yeah, it's streaming in case. Yeah.
Four stretches, almost, it's about three. Yeah. I saw you bought it. I'm probably going to try to rewatch it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'll buy a copy eventually, but I'm not going to pay $29 for it.
So
it's good that I
was high on it.
It's good I have impulsive friends like Matt that buy that shit and share their accounts with me.
Yep. That's what I do, baby. but I want to say that's it. That's all I checked out this week.
Yeah. Good shit. And, there's not much else to watch. I mean, there's nothing come out in theaters. So Planet of the Apes in a few weeks, you know, and, I'm sure it's good. Rebel Moon Part 2 comes out tomorrow on Netflix. It's weird, man. They advertised the shit out of Rebel Moon Part 1. This one, I feel like I didn't realize it was coming out tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know?
Me neither.
And then Zack Snyder's saying he's already working on a script for Part 3, that he plans this as a 6-part saga. So we'll see. Hopefully Part 2's pretty – I mean, I like Part 1. I'm still looking forward to Director's Cut because I feel like we talked about Rebel Moon Part 1. I feel like there was a lot more there that probably is in the director's cut. But, you know, Zack Snyder is interesting because I've never really watched anything his I haven't liked in some way, you know. He always, you know, when you watch a Snyder film, you know you're going to be entertained. I mean, that's 100%, you know, and I give him that kind of credit. So you know, Rebel Moon was sci-fi enough for me that I dug it. I'm gonna watch part two. You know, and that's the only big thing I can think that's coming to streaming. I'm sure there's gonna be some other things coming soon, you know, in the next few weeks. But all right, well, let's get to today's feature film, man. And fuck, man, you know what? I remembered why this I didn't retain this film very much after watching it, and that's because I fucking hate it. And not because it's not good. I hate it for how it plays out, for how it ends. It's so uncomfortable. Frank Darabont did that shit on purpose. He fought, he fought with the studio to keep the ending. The studio wanted a happy ending. Darabont's like, no, I'm going to walk away from the project if you don't give me the ending. But the studio wanted Darabont because of his work in The Green Mile and Shawshank Redemption.
Green Mile, yeah.
And, but fuck you, Frank Darabont, because this movie is fucked up. It's depressing. Mm-hmm. It's sad. It's harrowing. It doesn't make you feel good at all. And I remember now, I was like, this is why I didn't retain this movie. Cause I remember seeing it and walking away from it pissed off the first time I watched it. And now I'm in a different place in my life. I have kids now, which makes it even worse. You know, and that movie we're talking about is The Mist.
The Mist, baby.
Based on Stephen King novel and starring Thomas Jane and a bunch of casts that appeared in The Walking Dead after this was done, because Darabont went on to be a showrunner for The Walking Dead and, in fact, wanted Thomas Jane to play
Laurie Holden. Rick,
but Thomas Jane did not want to commit to television at the time, so he turned it down, which is fine. Andrew Lincoln did good. But it's basically takes place in a small town and in which a storm occurs that night. And so Thomas Jane's character of what's his name? Drayton is his last name.
Drayton.
Mike.
Yeah.
Was it Mike Drayton? He has to go into town.
David Drayton.
David Drayton goes into town with his son. He leaves the wife at home. He goes into town with his son to get supplies to fix the broken windows and stuff in the house. And he takes his neighbor with him after a little argument with the neighbor. They're trying to set up a feud. There's some things in this movie that don't work. They try to set up this little neighborly feud with his neighbor, but it doesn't really play out all that.
No. The character development doesn't work very well overall. Yeah,
it works better in the second half of the film.
Yes.
The first half of the film, it plays out really awkwardly. And as they're driving to town, they see this mist coming off the mountains, and they're like wondering what that is. And they're like, oh, maybe it's just from the storm. So as they approach the town, the mist starts taking over the entire town. And as they're inside the store shopping, they see a man running, and he's all bloodied, and he tells the people, there's something in the mist. We have to stay inside. So they end up locking themselves inside this grocery store with all these people. And eventually they discover by going downstairs to turn off the generator to save power, was it? Why would they turn off the generator?
No, well, it was smoking. It was
that's right, it was smoking. And there's something hitting the garage door, the loading door, and they discover that they open it to see what it is and discover that this monster brings his tentacles in and kills this young boy. And so they go up to tell the rest of them, and this is where the movie gets really just kind of weird. It splits up in like this group that believes him, this group that doesn't believe him. His neighbor fights with him. His neighbor like decides
Lord of the Flies kind of stuff going on.
His neighbor decides to get a group of people and they leave. At this point, not to be heard of again. We don't know if they survived or not until we find out later. This religious nut who she believes it's the end of times in the world. And my God, she's annoying as fuck. And that's where the movie starts to become really uncomfortable, because I get what Darabont was doing. He wanted you to feel uncomfortable. He wanted you to feel like this lady was right and she's taking sides and she's turning people on. But she also wanted you to side with David and his people and protecting the son. They were right. And in between all that, they do get attacked. These insects, these giant fucking mutated insects start hitting the window. A couple of them get broke inside. They kill the hot chick. I mean, I don't know the character's name.
Yeah, the babysitter.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. They fight off these insects. They protect the place. You have evil scientist from Captain America Winter Soldier plays like the grocery store clerk.
Yeah.
He's a sharpshooter and stuff. And you've got Sam Witwer, the voice of Darth Maul, playing a military guy. And he's kind of got this thing for the chick that gets killed. So then they realize that William Sadler, you know, he's in this film and he plays this crazy old bastard who decides that it's the military's fault. And then they attack Sam Witwer, in which he gets stabbed and all this crazy shit starts happening. And the movie makes you feel uncomfortable because I think as you're watching it, you start thinking like, man, this might be how it would really happen. You know, if you think about it, like if this crazy event is going on, this world changing event, people would be intense. You might have people with different beliefs, different ideas, and it brings these different walks of life together. And it plays out, I think, on purpose to be uncomfortable, but it also causes problems with the film because the character development, it happens too quickly. It doesn't work right. It causes this tension to build super quickly. And then you're like, wait, why is this going on?
Cinematically, it's weird because the film starts out cinematic.
Yeah.
Wide shots, you know, high quality shots. And then all of a sudden, once they have to lock themselves into the grocery store, shaky cam, like it's, you know, Cloverfield style almost, you know, it's like trying to make it gritty. And I'm like, man, pick one, cinematic or gritty, you know, handheld camera type cinema. But there's a lot of things that don't work as far as like the character development and, you know, some of the shooting. But one thing that I actually don't like, I don't think I like the, that they actually showed the monsters or the bugs up close. I think they should have, I think it would have been way creepier if you didn't know what was in the mist, maybe to keep the tentacles
or to keep them in the fog like they did.
Yes. Keep them in the fog.
You see silhouettes and shadows of them.
Yes. Yeah, I think that would have been way creepier when they go to the drugstore across the street and you basically get like aliens except with spiders. That part, I mean, right. They're being spiders in the corpses. That was pretty creepy. But whenever you actually see the spiders, I felt like, maybe it could have been done a little bit better, the animation. And that's why I'm like, maybe they should have just left the fog or the mist, which they're funny is this movie. I feel like it's a mix between Lord of the Flies, Aliens and the fog. Yeah.
Well, you're right. For 2007, I feel like the animation could have been better. It's not that old of a movie. But it was shot on a pretty low budget. I can see that. And then, but then shortly after the drugstore scene, we discover that it is kind of aliens in a way that the military, that they question Sam Witwer's character and he doesn't really know, but he heard rumblings about them opening up another dimension, doing projects in the military base near there, them messing around with dimensions. He thinks they must have opened up something. And it turns out through this rift in the dimension, these alien bugs came across into our world and have at this point looks like they've taken over our planet because through a series of events, David and his people that believe him, they forge a plan to escape. And as they're trying to escape, Religious Nut gets involved, and here comes a Winter Soldier scientist, and he shoots her in the fucking head. He's like, "I've had enough," you know. And because he's, you know, he's tired of her shit because she's dividing the group and she's causing more problems, saying it's the will of God and all this. And so they do devise a plan to escape, and they make a run to his car with an elderly couple, his son and Lori Holden, because he's probably, you know, thinking he's going to bang her one day, which sounds terrible. But probably. Yeah, I'm just trying to give this movie a sense of light. And they make it to the car, but not
The Walking Dead.
But they make it to the car, not before Sharpshooter gets caught by one of the alien bugs and is ripped apart. And this movie's pretty gruesome in some parts too. You know, it's like, it really is.
Getting ripped in half.
It's gruesome to the point that Stephen King himself said that this movie made him uncomfortable and frightened. And Frank Darabont said that's the biggest compliment he could have had. the writer of the film thought it was gruesome. So they make their way through the mist. And this is where the movie just goes from, I don't know if I'd say hopeful, but you're thinking like, hey, this is an action movie. They're making an escape plan. They're gonna get out. The world's gonna end great, right? So he goes by his house and his son is sleeping. And he discovers his wife has been killed by the aliens, and it's a sad moment. He mourns for a second, realizes he's glad his son didn't have to see it. But as they move forward across town, they get out of town, apparently pretty far, because it shows them on a freeway. It shows Portland, Oregon. So it looks like they got pretty far down the coastline. And they see this huge, which I thought was a cool shot, this giant freaking alien monster. Yeah. It's trembling the ground, walking across the freeways. And I thought that was cool. And it,
that one, and I think that was done good.
I think that was symbolizing that point they realized, is there any hope? We're done. How are we going to fight this, you know, this giant creature? And eventually they run out of gas, which I felt like there's, he knew he only had so much gas. I felt like
they should have been looking, guess, for somewhere.
Yeah. There should have been a scene to switch cars, look for gas. I felt like, and maybe you could have done something where they got attacked again and it took out the elderly couple or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, but I felt like David felt like this guy who was doing whatever he could to protect his son. Then all of a sudden you don't protect him by letting your car run out of gas. And then this is where the movie takes this absolutely horrifying turn where they have four bullets left in the gun and there's five of them. And so there's no words used, but as an audience member, you know that they're contemplating just killing each other to end it because they feel like there's no hope. So in this terrifyingly well shot, I'll give thereabouts credit, the scene with the camera pulled back, you see the gun muzzles in the truck, and then you hear David screaming. You know he just killed those people, including his son, and you're like, oh my God, you know? And then he gets out of the car because he sees the mist starting to clear up, and he's like, what's going on? He's confused, he's delirious, and he just had a horrifying event. And then here comes the military with flamethrowers killing the bug nest. The mist is clearing out. They've got hundreds of people in these vehicles, including a lady that left the grocery store early in the film, another Walking Dead veteran.
Carol. Yeah.
Carol. And he can't believe what he's done. And that's how the film ends, with a sense of hope that we can beat these aliens, but also a sense of pure dread of what David had to go through. I mean, you know, how does he live on after that? And good Lord, I mean, like, the movie plays on your emotions as to what would be like in this situation. I think the movie, for that aspect of it, the terrifying aspect of it, I think it plays very well. Darabont's direction is good. I just feel mm-hmm. like it cuts too many corners when it comes to character development and the fleshing out of the story a little bit. It leaves almost too much up for interpretation. But I can agree with you. Like, we should, like, when we saw the tentacles, we saw the monster in the fog shadow, that was enough. Maybe we didn't need the insect scene, you know, things like that. You know, maybe when his neighbor and their friends left on their own, maybe it would have been cool enough to see their body parts thrown at the windows, you know, without seeing insects. You know, it could have had the same effect. And maybe played up the human story more of the religious nut, more than tearing each other apart, go more Lord of the Flies than alien invasion.
I think that's what they wanted to. They wanted, you know, obviously they wanted the people to, you know, have tension and there be discourse in between the groups. And the dialogue, whenever that's starting to happen, it's like some of these people had only just met David and like, we're kind of strangers. And then whenever he's, you know, talking about, you know, what he saw in the, you know, outside and what they should do, he's like, oh, you think you're better than me because you're some artsy fartsy guy.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, you just met this guy. You don't.
Was that was cool. He was
a movie. You know his career.
He was a movie poster artist drawing movies, posters for Stephen King movies.
Yeah.
And the real art was the real art in the movie was made by Drew Struzan, who is, of course, a famous artist, did, you know, Star Wars films and Indiana Jones and things, you know. That was cool. Yeah, that was weird. And then they alluded that this town must have been some sort of travel town, I guess, with a military base there, because they kept saying, all you out of towners. So there must have been a lot of out of towners that came through this town very frequently if they referred to them as out of towners.
Yeah.
You know, which I thought was small interesting. Town. I think, though, as a monster movie, I think the movie's pretty cool. It has some cool designs, some cool ideas. Since this is our Monster Mania month, or Monsters, Monsters, Monsters. So I think that's mm-hmm. part of it's cool. I think that it's a really interesting idea that Stephen King got from watching. What did I read? That he was wondering about. He was in a grocery store shopping, and he wondered what would happen if a giant insect flew into it. That's how he came up with the story. If you've ever read how Stephen King comes up with the stories, he's a lot like George Lucas. He just thought, hey, that looks cool, and he came up with an idea. Everyone thinks he's a super terrifying person. He's really not. A lot of his story ideas are really simple, you know, and he turns them into books. And that's what I think makes he's a great artist, an amazing author like he is, you know. It feels like this movie would have served its, like, Shawshank Redemption, Green Mile are almost 3-hour films, are epic. And it feels like this would have served better as a Darabont epic. Make it maybe 30 minutes longer, flesh it out a little bit more, you know, so that the intensity builds even more, you know. I think it could have played out like that, to develop the characters more, a little more background on the religious lady and a few other things like that might have helped it. But I still think it's a pretty solid film. I just hate the film for what it is and what it represents, and the fact that it makes me feel extremely uncomfortable watching it. I will probably never watch it again after the second time. That was enough. I don't feel a need to watch it again.
Same here. It's definitely one of those one and done films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but from as far as monster movies go, it's cool. You know, I dig it. I dig the ideas of it. I dig the ideas of the monsters. I dig the ideas of a dimensional rift. I always like crazy science fiction like that. So it works on those levels for a monster film. Just character development could have been a little bit better. But that said, it's well acted. I think all the actors do a good job. Thomas Jane's one of the more rangy films he's done. You know, he shows emotion, shows some range in it.
I think all the women, like Carol, right at the beginning, it's like she's trying to win her Oscar. She's like, I left the kids at home. I gotta get them. I've got to go back out. And they're like, and the Oscar for best supporting actress goes to, you know.
Right. I can see that.
I feel like there's a lot of clips that these people have that, you know, I feel like they're trying. They're, you know, and the effort's there.
Yeah, no, that's true. But a pretty cool film. You know, if I had known it had been so, if I had remembered it was so depressing, we might have done it early in Monster Month.
Crescendo.
Yeah, but it's good shit. You know, it was fun doing these monster movies. You know, got to talk about my favorite monster of all time, Godzilla. You know, I don't know, what's your favorite monster of all time?
Ooh.
And it doesn't have to be a movie monster, just generally monster. Godzilla is my favorite.
Yeah.
And of course, I love the work that Guillermo del Toro does in almost any movie, but especially Pan's Labyrinth. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, you know, Godzilla as of late has been a favorite for me. I'd have to go with Godzilla too, just because it's like... At first, it's like I was just a leisure Godzilla fan, but this recent surgence of Godzilla films and monster films, I mean, you know, I don't see how you top Godzilla at all.
I mean, he's the king.
He is the king. He's the king of monsters. Yeah. So, yeah, and Godzilla, dude.
And, you know, Star Wars has great monsters. I've always loved the Rancor. It's probably one of my favorite Star Wars monsters. That's why, for me, the Book of Boba Fett, I know... It wasn't super received by all the fans, but man, seeing Mando ride the Rancor, to me, that's a top 20 Star Wars moment for me. That was fucking cool shit. I fucking love that, you know. So things like that, you know.
Sandworms are pretty cool after watching Dune.
Yeah, especially cool. Villanova's. Well, I mean, you know, that's one thing, the 84 film, even though the 84 film's a clusterfuck, the worms are pretty cool for 1984.
You know, yeah, just not the surfing on the worm part. That was kind of it. It just looked weird,
right? And that's I think when it was made, it was 40 years old, you know. But but Lynch tried with the budget he had, but you know, it's hard to compete with 84 tech and CGI that Villanova had to work with, you know. But yeah, man, monsters are always going to be cool in films. You know, they're never going to get old. And it was fun to do these movies, and we'll do. for Godzilla 70th anniversary later this year. We'll do some couple more Godzilla films. I'm sure we'll do. There's always plenty of mothers. There was a movie called Troll Hunter I've never watched. I almost put it on this list, but I don't know if it's streaming anywhere right now. I've always wanted to watch it. It's a found footage type film about them finding a troll.
I mean, I heard it's got a big following.
Yeah, I think it's a Korean film or a Japanese film. The Host. I've never seen The Host. It's a big monster movie. Yeah. So there's lots of other ones we can do and cover on the show eventually, you know, in time. But it was a good Monster Month, and we're going to not necessarily continue Monster Month next month. We are going to do a movie that has terrifying creatures in it. They're almost monster-like, and that would be zombie horror as next week as we crescendo towards our 400th episode. And so next week we're going to do a movie that's only about 11 years old, and this was a movie that was plagued with production problems when it came out, and several delays on this movie based on the popular book, and starred Brad Pitt in the film. And people thought when the movie came out that it was going to be a mess because of the reshoots and the re-edits, and the test audiences did not like the film, and they had to reshoot the ending. And we'll talk about all that next week. But the final product of this film came out pretty fucking cool, and it made money at the box office. There was going to be a sequel at one point, but the sequel took so long to develop that Brad Pitt walked away and the studio dropped it. But that movie we're talking about is World War Z.
Does it live in a jungle?
No.
Oh.
Is it really fast?
No.
Does it live on the Great Plains of Africa?
No. Hey!
What is going on?
Hold on, guys.
Daddy, be careful on the road. Jerry?
Get back in your car right now! Remain with your vehicle!
What is this?
It's the scene worldwide. Is anyone doing better than we are?
We don't know.
I'm scared.
How do we know they're coming?
They're coming. Ready?
Go, go, go!
Come on!
To help him.
You're asking me to leave my family.
I'm not gonna force you.
Don't pretend you're not well suited for the job.
Baby?
Tell the kids I'm coming back.
Honey!
Just know I'm coming back.
This is a cool fucking film, I thought, man. I was like, you know, I always wanted another cool zombie like movie in the vein of 28 Days Later with fast moving zombies and taking it more like a virus than a Living Dead. And that's what World War Z does. And we'll talk about how they changed the ending to make it a little more hopeful and some other things that they did and the reshoots next week when we talk about this this movie. And it should be a fun one to talk about. Before we get into the month of May and head towards that 400th episode. Looking forward to talking World War Z on next week's show. But until then, the rebelradiopodcast.com, as I said earlier in the show, and we thank you, man. We thank all you have ever listened to the show for these 10 years of putting it together for it. And we look forward to going to Comp Blues again this year and
appreciate it.
Having our live show there. And, you know, and until then, continue to be safe, and we'll see you out there. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Just go there and do it.